Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family video show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. If this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. Having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I am grateful to have met and worked with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you all can do me a big favor. Please check out some of our past shows at answersforthefamily.com or subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher or iHeartRadio, and you'll hear some informative and entertaining guests, as well as some dynamic co-hosts, discuss ways for you and your loved ones to become happier, healthier, and more at peace. Now, I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or someone you know that can benefit from a particular subject. I want you to know that I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, for those of you that know a little bit about me, I think you know that I've been blessed with occupations that have allowed me to travel the world, meet, and have wonderful conversations with many people along the way. So I'm not alone when I say that I've had times when I've wanted to just get out of the rat race and set off on a journey just to see where life takes me. Well, today's show is about an incredible story of a woman's cross-country journey to escape an abusive past and find healing on horseback. It's told in a straightforward, personable writing with outdoorsy adventure. This is her new book, Schlepp, Finding Healing on Horseback in the Lower 48. And it's about a woman remaking herself and her whole life and gaining a deeper confidence than she had ever known. In 2004, Kathy Burns bought her first horse, Dreamy, and riding became her passion. In 2012, at the age of 59, Kathy left an abusive marriage and set off on a healing journey, which she calls SLEP, soul searching, home seeking, liberating equestrian, and praise, camping, riding, and blogging in 43 states. A mother of three children in their 20s, Kathy now lives in Tehachapi, California, with her beloved horses, dog, and cats. Kathy, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much, Alan. Good to be here.
Well, it is great to have you. I have enjoyed going into your story, and the more that I listen to it, or read it, the more I felt that this was something that I think a lot of people could relate to. So I'm glad that you're taking the time to share this, not only by writing the book, but coming on our show. But before we go into the journey, give us a little background on who you were before your life-changing journey.
Okay, well, I had been a successful New York City businesswoman and met the man of my dreams. I was about 35 when we got married, and we had three kids together. I moved from New York to Chicago and then to California with him. And when my kids were about in their adolescence, and that was actually the time that I retired from my career as well, things went very downhill in our marriage. By the time I left, and I actually had a therapist in Illinois before we moved to California in 2000 tell me that if I followed that man to California, he was going to kill me. But I really thought that I was strong enough to sacrifice a piece of myself to keep the family together, because I thought that was important for the children. Mm-hmm. I also knew that divorcing this guy was going to be very ugly, because I had witnessed his first divorce. So I stayed for another 12 years, and then when my kids were all, just about one of them was still in last year of high school, but I really didn't feel like I was needed as much at home anymore, I filed for divorce. And a year after that, when my youngest did go off to college, I went off on schlep. I, at that point, was really a psychological basket case. I had really just lost all my self-esteem in the process of those 12 years. And when I suggested this crazy idea of this cross-country journey with my horses to my therapist, she perked up and she said, "I think you should do it. I think it would be therapeutic." And I was very concerned about leaving my children behind. Even though they were in college, they would still come home for the weekends. And if I didn't have a place, they'd have to go to their dad's. And I said, "Don't you think that would be abandoning my children?" And she said, "It's like the message on the airplane, the safety message, that put your own mm-hmm. oxygen mask on first before you put your child on. Because you can't help them unless you're better."
Right. So when you announced this to your children, what was their first reaction?
It was hard for me to read. They were pretty much avoiding me. I was really surprised how they reacted. My daughter eventually did move in with me, but in the beginning, it seemed like they were taking my husband's side. And actually, when I said to my daughter that I had been emotionally abused for the last 15 years, she called me a liar. So I really felt estranged from the whole family at that point. That has changed since then, but it was not supportive at all. They're not supportive of the book being out there either, although I did change everybody's names, and I don't want anyone to really identify them. But it's touchy situation still.
Well, having gone through what you went through, what would be some things that you would say to someone else if they came to you or they heard this interview and said, "Wow, I feel like I'm going through sort of a psychologically abusive situation myself"? What would you say to them that might be able to help them achieve some level of happiness or growth in their life?
It's really difficult in my opinion, with emotional abuse. You don't have a broken bone or a bruise. And the way that, from the women that I've spoken to that have also gone through this, it starts very slowly, and it's subtle, and it gets worse and worse and worse. And so you don't, like, there's no line in the sand, you know? It's just, mm-hmm. It's like, okay, if he does this, I'm gonna leave. I was in therapy all of this time, and I had at least five different therapists and my doctor tell me to leave this guy. And that was either from they'd met him, or they were watching my decay. And actually the children's therapists even told me that the home was toxic at this point to the kids. And so, but none of them did I listen to. And I've heard this from people that work with women's shelters. Until the woman has made up her mind, yes, this has crossed the line, I need to get out and save myself, there's not much that you can do to persuade them. It's almost like I think that And there's a book called The 12 Agreements, and halfway through my journey, someone had lent it to me, and there's a section in there that I quote in my book, but it's something to do with, it's got to do with your own self-esteem, and you will tolerate abuse, neglect, and that sort of thing, up to the point where you feel that you're deserving of it. Now, that might sound harsh, but you know, we all carry around traumas from our childhood and our teens that maybe we've stuffed or forgotten, or but they're still in our subconscious and they're affecting our self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And we will tolerate some pretty bad crap if we were treated pretty badly when we were a kid and made to feel worthless then. So it's a kind of like a, you know, in a drug addict or an alcoholic, you have to let them reach their bottom. You don't want to enable them, because the sooner they reach their bottom, they will seek help. And they're not going to get better unless they've got that seeking element in them. They've got to want it. Mm-hmm. And everybody's bottom is different. When I was addicted to coke in the 80s, my bottom was pretty shallow. And when I got into Narcotics Anonymous and heard stories, horrifying stories, and I was like, how could anybody let, you know, everybody, in short, everyone's bottom is different. And so you shouldn't compare, can't compare everybody's stories. But the one thing is that you've got to reach that bottom yourself before you're going to take the plunge to get out, because dramatically changing your life by leaving your spouse is so scary. I mean, it's a huge step for most people. It's a dramatic change. You're going to be alone. They might be financially distraught at that point. They're probably have had a lot of psychological damage at that point. They maybe aren't capable of supporting themselves. A lot of women, after they've, you know, they stayed home, they endured a bad marriage to get the kids through high school and then to leave then. Okay, so my situation, I was 59. I hadn't worked in 15 years. I naively thought I'd be able to find a job, but I couldn't. I had been a successful career woman, and I couldn't get a job bagging groceries. So there's a lot of things that make a move like that terribly. You're just trapped. I felt like I was trapped. I'm an artist, and I took the last couple of years before I left, all my paintings, I called them looking at something through something. I was so blind to my situation. And I look at them now, and they're so clearly looking through prison bars. But I didn't see it at the time. So it's strange how the mind works and what it takes for you to make that kind of a move. But you can survive. You can get through to the other side. It's definitely possible. I did it. I've got a better life now.
Well, we have a listener comment coming in, and this one reads, I left an abusive husband after 30 years of marriage, and as you expressed, it was my horses and other amazing four-legged friends who helped nurse me back to becoming more emotionally stable. I have no desire to publish a book, but just the summary of your story has inspired me to write the account of my life. I would like my grandchildren and the generations to come to know my journey, and that one can endure hardship and come out the other side whole and filled with gratitude. I purchased your book, and I am so excited to read and share it. Perhaps it will help me to finding the right words to deliver my own message. And this is from Julie in Arizona.
Oh, that's so cool. When I hear those stories, or when people PM me on Facebook, the women that are in the midst of the transition, I want to like just reach out and hug them. And I'm like, this is who I wrote this book for. You can do this. The healing power of the horse is incredible. It's definitely a thing. It works. And that was part of my journey. And I'm just so happy when I hear hear that people are inspired by it. As far as writing her own story, I'm assuming she's not a writer, and neither was I. So what I did, and you might want to try this, is I journaled. I was not a journaler up until that point, but somebody before I left said made the suggestion that I should journal. And so I did. And then a lot of that journal ended up on a blog, but a lot of it was very private stuff. So by the time I was finished with the journey, I had, I think it was like 1,000 pages typed. And, you know, a book is supposed to be like, you know, around maybe 300 pages. So I had to, and it was rambling. And especially in the beginning, my brain wasn't working correctly at all. It was, you know, incomplete sentences and hard to follow, even for myself to read. So I had to rewrite the whole thing. And I had to structure the story so that it kept your interest and that it didn't have, like, long rambling scenes of me riding through the mountains for hours on end and tying it back to what happened in the past and what, you know, what triggers were triggering memories or nightmares. And so what I did was I hired a private writing coach. You could do that or you could go take a writing class. There are formulas for structuring a book that need to be followed if you're going to keep the reader's interest and get them to finish it. And I hired a wonderful woman in Los Angeles, Terry Wolverton, and she worked with me one-on-one, and she worked with me for a couple of years on it. And nice. I could not have put that book together without her.
Well, and so let's talk a little bit about the journey itself. And one of the things, because you mentioned you were a very successful businesswoman in New York. Okay, most people, when you think of somebody in New York, you don't think of camping. So, So how much experience with camping did you have before this trip?
I had never gone horse camping before. I'd never even owned a truck before. The trailer that I pulled was ginormous. So just the hauling, driving the rig was a huge challenge. I had gone on some packing trips up in the Sierras, but they were completely taken care of by the workers, the wranglers. All we had to do was ride from one place to the next. They'd set up camp and did all the hard work. So I did take a test trip this summer before I was going to leave, just to see what I still needed to work out and figure out. I didn't understand how the trailer worked. I needed experience driving it. So I hauled up to an EGALA clinic. EGALA is horse therapy, which is something that I'm into. I would like to actually do it here on my ranch. But and I had so many problems on that trip, major, major problems. I wrecked the trailer and the horses did not get hurt. But I came back to Pasadena, and I took private truck driving lessons after that point, and I spent hours in the Rose Bowl parking lot practicing driving it. It was the biggest challenge was the dealing with the trailer and the truck, how all the systems on the trailer worked, my fear driving, especially since my precious horses were in the trailer. And but I learned from that little test trip a lot of things. So when I finally set off, I was in better shape. I was completely confident in my abilities to take care of the horses. I'd had them at home for like 5 years, and I was taking care of their feet myself, and I had beefed up on all my horse care in preparation for this, and I had a veterinarian in Shadow Hills that stayed in touch with me the entire trip and sent me medications and gave me advice for my horses and my dog. But it was, I was really inexperienced. It was pretty crazy.
All right. You were you were learning as you go. Now, you mentioned earlier that you're an artist. So, and I know that you made paintings, you know, of a horse in each state. Now, does that also show part of your transformation? Because you talked about how you were an artist, and when you look back at the art that you were doing prior to your journey, that, that you felt like you were doing this from prison bars. Can you see the transformation just by seeing your paintings and knowing which state and which date you were doing that particular painting?
Well, when I look at the ones that I did on the road, no, they bring me right back to that place. But the interesting thing is that when I'm painting, I'm so absorbed in the paint and the picture that I can lose myself. It's like you can do reading a book or watching a movie. You could just like turn off all the negative chatter in your head. And that happens to me when I'm painting and when I'm writing. Those are my two big efforts. And so they actually look like I can remember looking at one thinking, you know, I can remember being there and being scared out of my mind that I was going to die on this trip. But I look at the picture and it's so pretty and there's flowers in the field and the sky is blue. I don't see the fear in the paintings at all. So no, that's interesting, but no, I don't. Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you still have these paintings?
I've been selling them slowly but surely. I did the ones that I did on the trip were small. They're like 10 inches square because everything had to fit in this trailer. I was living in this 12-foot-long living quarters that was like the size of my old bathroom. So I had these Masonite boards cut down to 10 by 10, and I worked in acrylics on those. And then when I got back settled again, I had a studio and I started doing them over in oils in a larger format. So there's 43 of the little ones, and then I've got probably about 2/3 of the way through the larger oils. I've had a couple of shows, and but most of the sales have taken place from people that have seen them on the blog, or they've been following my story on Facebook. They see, I post pictures of them as they do them. And I'm shipping them off to somebody that I've actually never met. So it's pretty cool.
Right. Working up, and which stands for soul searching, home seeking, liberating equestrian, and praise. We're talking about her journey that has been transformational for her. Now, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. And when we come back, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about how this has affected your faith. So stay with us. We're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that is legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. With me is Kathy Burns. We're talking about her book, Schlepp, Finding Healing on Horseback in the Lower 48. So, Kathy, how did this affect your faith? I could tell in reading it that, you know, that God and religion was a very important part of your story. How did this change you and the way in which you looked at your faith?
Oh, it changed me completely. I had been a Catholic. I drifted away from the church in my teen years after I had an abortion. I had tremendous guilt over that, and I felt that God had abandoned me. And right before I got married, I was told to have a hysterectomy, that I had cervical cancer, and I thought that God was punishing me. And I made a deal with God. I thought I made a deal with God that if I was allowed to have kids, that I would raise them in the church. And so I did. I postponed the hysterectomy till after I had three kids. Survived through that fine, and I raised them in the church. But when my middle son was an adolescent, our world pretty much fell apart. He was I was told he was suicidal and needed to be put in a hospital. It was a devastating experience for me. My husband did not believe in psychiatry or psychotropic drugs, and I felt the ground came out from under me through that whole experience, and I walked away from God. I definitely walked away from God. I quit going to church, I lived like that for the rest of the time until the year before I left on Schlepp. I'd left my husband. My daughter eventually moved in with me, and she had continued going to church through all this, but she had switched to one of these newer Christian churches. And she that summer asked me to go to church with her, and I did. And I was so moved by the service. It was the new Christian rock music, which I'd never heard before. And the sermon was not anything like I had heard in the Catholic Church. It was not about punishment or don't do this or don't do that. It was about how God loves you, and you're a child of God, and he walks by your side all the time. And I cried through the whole service. And that was really the beginning of the change. And then while I was on the road, when I got to Missouri, I was with three new friends that I had met. And the last day that I was there, I was really getting depressed. Everybody was going home. This happened a lot when people would leave camp. Like, so that they're going home to their jobs, they're going home to their families, they're going home to their homes. They're going home to all the things that I didn't feel that I had anymore. And I got very depressed. And the three of them saw me and asked me if they could pray for me. No one had ever asked me that in my whole life before. And honestly, at that time, I thought, you know, if anybody ever had asked me that, I would have taken it as an insult. Like, they think I'm like so pathetic that I need to be prayed for. But I was in a very weak state, and this woman, and actually they all took turns praying for me, touched on every fear and every concern and every angst that I was feeling inside. They'd been with me for a week, so they'd gotten to know me. And it was really incredible what happened at that meeting. I then went some more states. I was headed to Florida to see my dad, who had cancer. And I wanted to spend some time with him, and plus I wanted to get out of the winter weather. And while I was in Florida, I started going to a church there, and I got baptized. And that was, again, it was earth-shattering to me. I know it's not like that for everybody, but for me it was like I felt like when I came out of the water, I had been washed of all the sins of my life. Believe me, from the time of my abortions to the time I got married, my life was filled with lots of sins. I felt hope all of a sudden. I really felt hopeful that I was going to survive this transition that I was in the middle of. I then headed to New Jersey, where while I was there, my mother died. Mm. And if I did not have my faith to get me through that, this is probably not a typical mother's death, because I had a lot of resentment for my mother, but I had stuffed it, and I felt like when I was at her bedside for those 6 weeks, I thought, like, why am I not more sad? What's the matter with me? Why do I feel like she's irritating me? But through my faith, I was able to get in touch with what was going on. It was all this repressed anger that I had for her. And I was able to understand that she did the best that she could. She was a teenager when she got pregnant with me, and she had a lot of emotional problems herself. And I was able to, by the time I got her ashes to Wisconsin, where I buried them next to her mother, I was able to forgive her. So it's been an incredible journey. This all took place, 5 years ago, but I have put so much effort into my faith walk since then. It's like I feel like I'm a student again. And I spend a lot of time every day learning about the Bible. I mean, as a Catholic, I don't know why, but we never read the Bible. I don't remember anybody ever reading it to me. And it's a big book to get through, and it's hard to understand. Mm-hmm. So I subscribe to podcasts. I go to church, and I go to the kind of churches where they actually spend a lot of time talking about a small piece of scripture and then explaining it and how it relates to our life today in a completely different civilization than it was written in. It has just changed me. I noticed in the beginning I would say things, and then as the words came out of my mouth, I was like, where did that come from? I'd say, things that sounded like a Jesus freak to me. and that wasn't like a good term for me at the time. But people say I am a Jesus freak now, and I suppose I am. I've got it tattooed on my hand.
Let me ask. So now you said that a lot of this spiritual transformation came with your daughter taking you to her church. Was this right before, during, or right after your 13-month journey?
It was the month before I left on the journey.
Okay.
I left in September, and she took me to church that summer.
Wow, that sounds like the timing was perfect then.
Yeah, the timing, in hindsight, it felt like chaos. Everything felt like chaos at the time. But in hindsight, the timing of everything was perfect. It really was.
So while you were on your journey, was there one person that you met on the trip that has really stuck in your memory that made a huge difference in the success of that journey and in the success of your transformation?
People ask me this all the time. There were a lot of people. There was the pastor that convinced me I should get baptized in Florida. There was a guy in Arkansas when I got lost out on the trail, and he came out and rescued me, and he spent a lot of time with me, riding with me, telling me about trail safety, some things that I just wasn't aware of, that I should get my horses shod because it was so rocky there. There was a guy in Idaho that I spent a week with him, and he taught me all of the different systems on the trailer. There was the prayer circle in Missouri, the women, and actually in every state, the women that I met that would listen to me, my sob story, and then they'd tell me their story, which was 90% of the time much worse than mine. And I would feel like, oh, wow, and look at them. They're doing pretty darn good. So we were inspiring each other. It was there were so many people, And it was the people thing that changed me the most, all of these people, because I felt like I could start to trust people again, that there are good people out there that love and care about each other and will help you when you're in need.
You know what, I want to thank you for sharing that, because I completely agree, and yet, you know, if people spend their time watching, mainstream media and, and political jargon and things like that, you'd think that people were all horrible, you know. So I love the fact that you're sharing that, because, and that's part of what this show is about, is that we want to reinforce that fact. You know, we want to reinforce how kindness flows through people. We have people like Gabriella that is traveling around the world, you know, promoting that. Again, when I was reading your story and saying, you know, this is so much more what is real than what people are seeing on television. So I'm just so glad that you shared that.
Yeah, that's one common comment that I get about the book from people that have read it, is that it's so honest.
Yes.
And that always surprises me when I hear that. It's like, well, yeah, of course. Why would I lie? But, you know, I know now, I get what they're saying. I don't watch television. I watch very, very little television.
Yeah.
It's not, there is so much bad stuff on TV, honestly. In general, people that are into horses are a different breed of people, I also believe. And also when you get out of the cities. I had always lived in the cities, so this was like a whole new element for me. These women, I was meeting women that were 20 years younger than me that already had grandkids, and my kids were in college. It's completely different. People get married younger, they have kids young, the families stay around in the same town, and they help and take care of each other. And that, not that they don't have problems, because they definitely have problems. They have huge drug problems in their small towns. But they just, especially a lot of them were more faith, had more faith. I don't think I met anybody the whole 15 years I was living in La Cañada that was really what I would consider following Jesus or doing outreach to help disadvantaged people. They might be writing checks and giving money, but that's not the same. It's not right. The same as like being nice to the person that's checking you out at the grocery stand. I mean, like every little thing, every little encounter with people, you should be looking at them as God looks at them. You know, they're a human being. They have a story too. They might be in pain right now too. And you know, how would you feel if you were in their shoes? You should treat everybody the way you want to be treated yourself.
I got that right. Well, yeah, and that was, and again, as I said in the very beginning in the introduction, you know, one of the first feelings that I got from the book was straightforward, you know, which then goes right into with being honest. Now we have another listener comment, and this one reads, I haven't heard the word schlep since I was a kid in the 60s, and it brought back a flood of funny memories. As a kid in New York City, I remember telling my friends who lived in buildings with elevators that my nickname was Schlep and Fetch It, typically up six flights of stairs. And it says, you know, back to your book, you know, what a feat that was, traveling cross country by yourself with a horse and trailer in tow. Thank you for sharing your experiences and your faith. I finished your book last night, and it was amazing. And this is from Nancy in Florida.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. Yes, no, it definitely is a play on words. The Yiddish word has a C in it, but I wanted to make it I forgot the word. What's it called? When the letter stands for something. Anyway, I couldn't come up with a word.
An acronym.
Yeah, that's it. I couldn't come up with a word for C. But I lived for a long time in New York City. I was in sales in New York, and I had a lot of Jewish friends. Don't really know hardly any Jewish people in California for some reason. I guess I'm not in the right town. But they always were talking about schlepping their crap from one place to the next. And it just becomes like part of your lingo when you're living in New York. And so I used it all the time. And that's exactly what I was doing. I was schlepping everything that I owned from one state to the next. I gave up my apartment when I left California. So, I mean, everything that I had was in that rig. So it definitely was schlepping. As somebody at one point said, oh, if you write a book, what are you going to call it? And I said, well, I'd call it Schlep, because that's where I'm calling the trip. And they said, oh, no, that's too boring. It's got to be something, you know, inspirational. I was like, well, that's kind of how I felt. Like I was just schlepping from I did not feel like this was an adventure. People talked about how it was like this grand adventure, my father included, my father who financed it for me because I was broke. He called it this grand adventure, and that, you know, is the adventure of a lifetime. But it, to me, I didn't feel like an adventurer, or and it did not feel like a vacation or an adventure at all. It was, to me, it was a like dragging my stuff from place to place. It became drudgery. It was tremendously physically exhausting to do all of this every day, setting up camp, hauling here, taking care of the horses, riding the horses, painting the picture, posting the blog. I mean, I didn't have a second to get lazy. So anyway.
Well, it sounds like it was physically taxing, but you know, spiritually and transformationally healing.
Yes, and I think the physically taxing part was actually healing as well. I think there's something that goes, like, you know, I wanted to work on my mind, and somehow, like, I'm not sure how that connection is, but I remember reading something about it by somebody, that there is some kind of connection besides keeping you preoccupied with, you know, getting a task done. Well, you know, there's gratification. Every little task that you get done, there's mm-hmm. some kind of gratification that, okay, yeah, you achieved that, you did that. You're pretty competent. So maybe that's what it is.
Well, we have another question that has come in, again, another listener question. And again, I want to take the time to thank the listeners that take the time not only to send in questions, but to forward the shows to other people that they know, to their social networks. You know, again, I'm very, very appreciative when you do that. This one reads, I am thinking of taking a similar, and in parentheses, find myself journey. What is the single most important piece of advice you would give someone before they started?
Ooh. I've said this to a lot of people. It was something that my dad said to me, do it before you're too old.
mm-hmm.
And that was really, like, you know, a good push. Also, do it for yourself. Do it. I mean, to me, this was like my shortcut therapy plan. And it worked. So if you have the resources and the time, you can make the time to do something like this for yourself. Like, who's more important to, like, your whole family's happiness is you're going to, if you're going to be happy, that's going to be contagious in your family and in your community. So, you know, work on yourself. And if, like me, going to therapy for years and just really not getting anywhere, maybe a journey would jumpstart it. So make yourself a priority.
I like that. And, you know, I wanted to add something to that also, is that not everybody can take a journey. Not everybody, you know, is in a position, you know, financially, or in any fashion to where they can go, okay, you know what, I'm going to take a year off and do this journey. But the horse aspect of this, and I've been to many, many programs that have equine therapy. And so I've met and observed some of the people that work in that area of equine therapy. And so even if you can't take a journey, pull up information on equine therapy, and be it that you go to somebody else's ranch and let them work with you, you know, and you can do it within your schedule. You know, this is something that a lot of people don't know about, you know, that there is so much value. It's used in many of the programs that work with at-risk youth. I've seen situations in which they take kids from the inner city that maybe were involved in gangs and had been involved in some very violent criminal activity, and put them out on a ranch and had them work with the horse. And what ended up happening, and some of the things that I saw, was the fact that the horse, being a prey animal, wouldn't give that person the time of day until they started to become a better person. And when they realized that, all of a sudden there was part of a transformation that they didn't realize, but it was the horse that was getting them to look more inside to see who they really were. So you know, there's so many aspects of this journey that you've taken, and I love the fact that you know, there's the spiritual growth, there's the communal growth, that what you talk about in regards to meeting wonderful people. There is so much beauty that's come out of this that, you know, for those, if you can't do it in a long term, there are short term things you can do to gain some of the benefits. Would you tend to agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I subscribe to the whole EGALA philosophy. I'm EGALA trained. EGALA stands for Equine Assisted Growth and Learning Association. Mm-hmm. There's another one out there that's called PATH, which originally was just for disabled people, physical disabilities, but now I believe they also have a psychological branch for that. But just being around horses for me in the beginning was so therapeutic, just having them in my backyard that I could go down there and cry into their manes. And when I would ride in the mountains, I could feel this energy coming up through my legs and giving me strength and power and confidence. As soon as I got off the horse, it would just all go away. But I knew that there was something there to be tapped into. And I started volunteering. There's a therapeutic ranch out in Shadow Hills. Johnny Higgins, I think his name is. And I worked with one summer with his veterans, called Saddles for Soldiers program. It's all for veterans dealing with PTSD. And that was a really wonderful experience to see how it transformed these men's lives. I also worked for another therapy ranch in Shadow Hills. Eva, I can't remember her name. And we worked with foster kids that were... did you know foster kids are just kicked out of the system at 18? I mean, if I'd been kicked out on the street at 18, I had no way I would have survived. I don't know how these kids do it. So the transition period just before that happens, they're pretty nervous. They're pretty scared to death of what's going to happen to them. Mm-hmm. So that was the age group that we were working with. In my training, there's quite a bit of training that needs to be done. In EGALA, we work with a horse expert and a mental health expert. We're a team. But in the training, we have to do a lot of role-playing, so practice sessions. And I talk about it in the book, but when I went up to that EGALA clinic on my test trip, I was role-playing the role of a mother of a dysfunctional family. And a situation happened during the course of the therapy that I got completely lost in what was going on and was burst out crying at the end, the evaluation. I was like, oh, my God, it's just like my real life. I can't deal with aggressive men. And the guy that was in charge of the clinic said, so see, that's why this therapy works so well. It's impossible when you're out there with these 1,000-pound animals to not get caught up in the metaphor of your life and see it. So it's very, people have revelations very much more quickly.
And that was a good facilitator that knew how to set that up and knew the value of it and what was going to come of it. Kathy, I just want to thank you and really acknowledge you and thank you for not only writing the book, but, you know, sharing your story with everybody. Because as we can tell, even by people that have already, messaged in, you're touching people, you're making a positive difference. And that's our goal here on this show. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much for having me. The more people that read it, the more people it can help.
Absolutely. So for everybody out there, please be sure and put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we will be joined by Rachel Cove and Seth Hall to discuss healing family dynamics through healthy and effective communication. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. And in fact, we will also have things if you want to go to Answers for the Family, and if you ask for any sort of resources, in the equine therapy area, we will help steer you in that direction as well. You can also subscribe to our show through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, or our newest edition, which is iHeartRadio. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. Even if you don't like what you hear, tell us what we can do better. It will help us to reach more people and to bring on greater people for your listening pleasure. The next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. Be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.